I am the woman at the well. I come to the well in the heat of the day alone to avoid the sneers and the gossiping, wagging tongues that cut into my already broken heart. I avoid the painful ignorance and the lack of loving care. Shame, it is my only covering. My men, they have all thrown me away for those that are younger and prettier than I. The shattered pieces of my life lay scattered all around me, leaving a trail of tears, desperate to be loved. Shattered and scattered is my soul. And then he, the King, the Messiah, Yeshua, he came to meet me, at the well. He told me all about myself. He didn't shame me. He didn't blame me. He didn't chastise me. He forgave me. He accepted me. And he healed and delivered me. He fulfills all my hopes of an abiding, undying love that will never end. Welcome, everybody. This is a modern-day Samaritan woman bringing to you another episode of Healing for the Nations. We together are on a journey to the heart of our Father. And on that journey, we are walking together with other truth-tellers, those that are on this journey to the Father's heart, and we together are on the way to the wedding feast of the Lamb. So we need to get our wedding attire without spot and wrinkle. And in order for that to happen, we do need truth tellers, those that have taken the log out of their own eyes so they can see the splinter in ours, those that can see the spots and the wrinkles on the back of our wedding attire and come alongside of us and gently speak the truth in love. I don't know about you, but I have spots and wrinkles on the back of my wedding attire, my wedding dress, and I need truth tellers that can love me enough to tell me the truth about those wrinkles and those spots. And today I'm super excited about my guest, and she is a fellow sojourner. Emily, welcome to Healing for the Nations.
Good morning, or well, good afternoon for you. Thank you.
Yes, it's afternoon here in Tennessee, and it is still morning there in Oregon.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. I am going to turn the mic over to you, and Emily is going to share with us her testimony on the first half. And then the second half of the show, Emily is going to be sharing with us the tools that have helped her in her journey of healing. So, Emily, could you tell us a little bit about yourself before you share your testimony, please?
Sure. So I live in Oregon. I am married, and I have 4 kids. I've always been a homeschool mom, and I also work online, and a little bit about me that won't give any spoilers before the testimony. I think I wanted to just start out kind of at the beginning. I was raised in Christian churches and, you know, Assembly of God, got saved when I was young, but didn't really understand what that meant as far as walking it out. My father was an alcoholic and bipolar, and so there was a lot of emotional abuse, though I didn't know those words at the time. And I got married when I was 18 to someone who I'd been dating all through high school, so not a lot of life experience behind me to be able to make that decision, and not a lot of guidance for making that decision. And so got married when I was 18, and in my early 20s, I started learning about Torah observance. I was on a message board for other Christian moms, moms from all different denominations, and one of them was talking about Torah, and I thought, well, that's just fascinating, and I started doing my own study and discovered, wow, this makes so much sense. And at the same time, I was learning about mutual submission in marriage. You know, of course, I had been raised that the wife is to submit and obey, and that just never sat well in my spirit. That never made sense to me logically. I really wanted a partner, and I thought I had found one because my husband at the time, ex-husband now, but we made decisions really well together. As I learned more about mutual submission from a biblical standpoint and really started to study that, I was around both in real life and online, a lot of marriages that were pretty blatantly abusive, either physical abuse or adultery or just a lot of controlling behavior. So I thought my husband and I were doing pretty well. You know, we made decisions well together. He seemed to respect me as a person or, you know, for the standard that I held at the time, I thought that. And so I always had this heart for women who were in abusive situations. I was always speaking to them about mutual submission, saying that Ephesians 5:21, it says believers submit to one another. Mm-hmm. And so that means husbands too. Mm-hmm. And we can make decisions together, you know, and it's really not that complicated to say, you know, hey, you want X and I want Y, and how can we work this out? You know, we do it every day with friends or with coworkers. It's just good communication, right? And so, so I was always talking about that, and what I wasn't understanding was that marriage can be so much deeper. It can have so much more intimacy. And the reason I didn't understand that is because even though my husband and I made decisions well together, we didn't have that depth of intimacy that comes from honesty and trust and integrity. He was addicted to porn, and so that was an ongoing issue with marriage. And, you know, of course, when I first found out, when we were real young, I thought, well, you know, that's just one of those things that men do. You know, that's what we're raised in our culture. Men just, you know, sex with their wife isn't going to be sufficient. They're going to go elsewhere, you know. And then a few years after that, I was like, no, this is actually really uncomfortable to me. I really do not like this. And I told him so. And he seemed willing to stop, you know, so I thought, great, that's the end of that. Until I found it again and again and again, you know, of lying and hiding. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of other, it was chronic lying in the marriage about all kinds of things, finances and just little things. And so I was always in this place of feeling like the sand was shifting beneath my feet. I never knew what I never knew what was real. And through the course of that, I was always trying to work on myself. You know, I had a lot of anger from being raised with my alcoholic father. And as my children were born, my first and my second children, you know, of course, the youngest kids get to be the experimental model.
Yes.
And so I could feel this anger in me that I thought was just not justified for these little people. And so I was always looking for things to help me heal. And one of the first things that I learned was about being able to recognize and understand my emotions. I was reading this book that had a list of words, you know, emotion words, and there were just hundreds of them. And I thought, wow, this just opened up my world. I thought the emotions were anger and sad and happy.
You know, right.
About emotions and when I was a kid. And so being able to do that with my kids and say, you know, wow, it seems like you're feeling really sad now, or break it down more, you know, you're irritated, you're embarrassed, you're, you know, it seems like you're overwhelmed right now. And being able to help my kids through that helped me to reparent myself.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it was just a powerful couple of years. It was very difficult and a lot of tears. And times when I would just sit on my hands to stop myself from spanking, I decided, I don't want to spank. Mm-hmm. And so I would, but I would get so angry sometimes, and I would just sit on my hands. God help me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so as I worked through those things with my children, I felt these changes happening in myself. And yet there was always this low level rage that I couldn't identify. And I thought, you know, something is wrong with me. I, even from before I got married, when I was a teenager, I thought that I was bipolar, like my father. And that was something that I had just carried with me through my whole life and into my marriage, and just assuming that these bouts of depression that I would get, or this or these highs that I would get where I could just go and get things done, I thought I was bipolar. And yet everyone around me, the people who would know me and who I would say that to, and I was very cautious about who I told that to, and they would say, really? That doesn't seem to fit. And I would say, well, you know, I hide it well, or I manage it well, and things like that. But I thought that I was. That carried into my marriage in believing this thing about me. And so believing that my depression And what I later understood to be anxiety was just this thing inside me that I didn't have any control over. I didn't understand yet how external circumstances, how things happening around me affected my emotions. Like I was so in such an emotional drought from my childhood and no understanding of how this worked. But even as I started to learn to help my children work through these things, I still didn't really understand it for myself. I hardly cried. I hardly expressed things. And so as the years went on, certain things about my marriage got better and certain things got worse. And one of the things that got worse was my husband's porn addiction. And when it was in 2018, one of my daughters came to me and said, "Mom, I think Dad was being sexual with me." And I immediately believed her. This was in the course of the Me Too movement, and I had been reading so many stories about children who are not believed, women who are not believed. And I didn't know that my husband had any kind of interest in children, but I understood enough about his chronic lying, his integrity and his porn addiction, and reading all these other stories, I just went, there's no way that my daughter would say this for no reason. And so I immediately believed her. I immediately confronted my husband and told him to get out. And I won't use the curse words here that I used to him, but I told him to get out in no uncertain terms. And as soon as we left the house, I took my other kids to my mom's house, and I took my daughter to the hospital because I wanted, I didn't know what needed to happen for evidence. What needed to happen, whatever needed to happen, I needed to make sure it happened right that moment. And so, and I called the police, they met us at the hospital, and after that, I asked all my other children if he had ever molested them, and they all said no. And so I thought, okay, the one saving grace in this is that at least it was this one time, and we caught this immediately. And he went to prison. He went to prison for 7 years. He's still in prison now. It wasn't until much later that one of my other daughters told me that he had molested her too, repeatedly for several years. And so that was just as I was feeling like I was healing from the, this first understanding of what happened to my one daughter, I was then hit with this realization that these years that I had been having bad dreams and feeling this low-level rage and just not understanding, it was my spirit telling me, there is something wrong in your home. You know, Yah was speaking to me and telling me, and I didn't know how to listen to my intuition at that time. And so going back and of course, replaying every memory in my mind, rethinking every incident or every time where I just had this off feeling, just this wrong feeling, and then being able to put the pieces together, it was very painful, but it was also very powerful that it wasn't this thing inside me that was wrong with me. I mean, yes, I had my healing to do from my childhood, but I was always working on that, and yet I could never get this feeling out of my spirit. And now I know that it was this intuition just screaming at me. And so I know in the second part we're going to go more into the healing tools, but after I found these things out, I did some grief recovery work. I did EMDR. I went to Adult Children of Alcoholics, and I'll go through all that in the second part. But so after my husband went to prison, I of course divorced him. And I see how women are often discouraged from divorce, or it's such a shameful thing. And I didn't get too much of that. People would start to go that direction, and then I would say, "He molested our daughters." Mm-hmm. And that's like one thing that you can say that people will go, oh, of course.
Yeah.
That's okay. You cut the course. But I see how even with adultery and porn addiction and emotional and financial abuse, if it's not physical abuse, people tend to not be okay with divorce. And so I still really have a heart for women in those situations too. So went through the divorce, went through a lot of healing, and then I met the man who's my husband now, Daniel. We were on a Torah observant group for singles, Hebrew Hearts. I was on there for a while, and I wanted to start out just making some male friends, just having some interactions with men that were safe and casual and friendly, and just kind of testing the waters and seeing who was out there. And so I did that, and that was fun. But of course, you know, when I told men that I was interested in a marriage that was mutual submission and partnership, and that, you know, the term spiritual leader isn't in the Bible. You know, I don't need a man to stand. In my profile, I put, I don't need a man to stand between me and God. And he's going to walk beside me with God, and let's pray together, and let's, you know, work through things together. And that scared most of them off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And then Daniel messaged me, and he had just gotten onto the group. And he read that, and he messaged me, and he said, you know, I always thought a good understanding of the Azer Kenegdo is co-warrior.
And I said, yes! Oh. Yes! That's awesome!
And we chatted a little bit, and it turned out he, you know, he hadn't really studied the topic real deeply, and so I said, well, I'm not gonna try to convince you. You know, he had the typical view of wives submitting, but it never sat right with him either. But that's what he had always been taught by his leaders and his mentors, and he did want a co-warrior, but it didn't, you know, he didn't have it all sussed out yet. And I said, well, I'm not gonna try to convince you. I said, here's a couple resources, and you go, you know, do your research and let me know what you think. Yeah. And within a couple of days, he was coming back to me and saying, wow, did you know this? And he'd coming to me with stuff that I hadn't even learned in my decade of this understanding. And he was excited about it. And he thought, does this mean that I can be the kind of man I was created to be? Because he is in touch with his emotions, and he's, you know, he still does typical guy stuff, like he's into cars, you know, and things like that, but he likes to cook. And some of these things he's been put down for, you know, as like, that's not manly enough. And he said, does that mean that I can be who I was created to be? And I said, yes. That's one of the things about this, is we can both be who we were created to be. And so as we started courting, we really wanted to do it right. You know, we're both Torah observant. We've both been married before, and we really wanted to do things right this time. And so we got to know each other enough. I really intentionally built a friendship, you know, asking each other all kinds of questions. We laid all the baggage out right in the front. You know, here's previous marriages. Here's, you know, my childhood junk. Like, this is who I am. Take it or leave it. And the honesty in that to me was just so powerful, and being able to just lay it all out there, and for both of us to say, you know, this is, can you accept me as who I am and what has happened to me and what I've done? And so that built a lot of trust between us. And then we started intentionally developing this friendship. We said, I know the word courting has been used in a lot of different ways, but what we wanted courting to be was intentionally building this friendship with the idea of seeing if we're compatible for marriage. So we approached it from that standpoint. We both knew that we wanted to get married again. We both knew that we didn't want to marry the wrong person. And so we spent many months learning all about each other, you know, not just the superficial stuff. What's your favorite color? And, you know, that kind of thing. Those kind of questions we never even got to until months later. We wanted to know, what's your baggage and what's your trauma and how did you heal? And what would you do differently this time in marriage than you did last? One of these days I'm going to put it on my blog, just this long list of questions that we asked each other. And so we really delved in deep until the point where we said, yeah, you know, we are compatible for marriage, and we've built this friendship and we know each other. It wasn't until that point that we got engaged, and of course we did a couple of visits. He lived in Tennessee at the time, and so he came out to here to visit me, and I watched how he was with my kids. I went out to visit him and met some of the people that he was close to, you know, just really checked each other out. And we got engaged and we got married in, let's see, he moved out here in February of 2021. We got married in April of 2021, and so we've just celebrated our 1 year anniversary recently.
Oh, you're still newlyweds.
Oh, no, yes.
Congratulations. Wow, that is so beautiful, and I'm really excited that you know, the Father brought your hearts together, that the Father healed both of you and taught both of you to be co-warriors.
Yes.
So we actually need to go on break. So, listener, when we come back, we're going to continue to have a chat with Emily, and we're going to be talking about the tools that were helpful in her healing process. So we will be right back after this break. Shalom.
The Son of Man has chosen me. How could it be that the Anointed One is gazing upon me? I was lost and overlooked, shattered by my countless sins. How could it be? The Son has chosen me. How could it be that the one I've been waiting for all my life has chosen me to reveal himself as the Anointed? I've been seen as an outcast, labeled as a failure. How could it be that the Son has chosen me? I was thirsty, I was broken, nothing satisfied, rejected.
Welcome back, Emily.
Thank you. you.
So Emily has been sharing with us her testimony. It's a really powerful testimony. So if you missed the first half, you can go to Heber Nation Radio and you can go to the schedule, see the other times that this show will air. Or in the future, it will be in the section for the deliverance. It's under the deliverance tab. So in this half, I've asked Emily to share what tools she used in her healing process that was helpful. So Emily, I'm going to give the mic over to you. And would you please share with the listener what helped you to heal?
So like I mentioned in the testimony, after my ex-husband molested our daughters and went to prison, of course, there was a lot of grief in that. And I had never really thought about the word grief, but I found this book called The Grief Recovery Handbook. And it talked about a lot of the myths that we have in our culture around grief. We have myths like just replace the loss. You know, oh, your puppy died and your parent says, oh, you know, we'll get you another one. There's no room for grieving that loss. Or the myth that we have to be strong. I saw my mom do this when my parents divorced, is just be strong. I like didn't see her cry. And I saw that with a lot of adults when I was a child, is there wasn't a lot of tears or grief about anything that happened. And the book goes on to list all these other myths that we have, and then how we can take a more healthy look at grief and actually allow ourselves to grieve. And I think this is very biblical in the sense that, you know, we read in the Bible about sackcloth and ashes, and do that really in our culture, you know. And so I allowed myself to do that, and really allowed myself, not even allow myself, but had to learn how to cry. And sometimes I would just pray to God, God, please let me cry. Please let me cry, because I just couldn't. And finally, the tears started to come. And boy, when they came. I had this idea in my head from my childhood that men don't cry. Men are strong and men are stoic. And so somewhere I absorbed men are better and men don't cry and women are weak and emotional, then I'll just be more like a man and be proud of the fact that I don't cry at movies and things like that. And so that kind of idea, and I would say things like, you know, yeah, well, I mean, it's healthy for everybody to cry. Men should cry. You should be able to cry too. But I hadn't really internalized that not only was it healthy for women to cry and healthy for men to cry, but that I didn't need to try to be more like our culture's version of a man in order to be worth something as a woman, you know?
Yes.
And so that was kind of a convoluted mess to get over. So I really started to let myself cry, and I went through this grief recovery handbook, and I went through things about my childhood and, of course, things about my ex-husband, the grief of what had happened with him molesting our daughters, the grief of the marriage that I wanted and desired and never had. Then I started doing counseling, and that was another thing that I was taught, you know, psychology is just kind of a worldly thing that isn't believing. But I really started to see it as more of, you know, Yah created our minds, and we want to understand how they work. And he created our emotions, and we want to understand how those work. And prayer is a powerful, powerful thing. But wise counsel is also something that he's given us. And so he's given us all these tools. He's given us prayer, so we have direct communication with him. He's given us the Bible. But the Bible was never meant to be I don't know what the word I'm looking for there is, but it gives us guidance for life. And of course, Torah gives us so much guidance for how to walk out love. And yet there are areas that the Bible is silent on, and we need wise counsel, and we need research, evidence-based tools that help us heal. And that doesn't mean that they're all right. Certainly some of them are wrong, and some of them are too much into New Age spirituality, but there are ones that are extremely helpful. And I started going to counseling, and I did EMDR, which is, for as many times as I've done it, and I still forget the acronym, eye movement.
Again, yeah, I don't remember either. I've done it too, and I don't remember it. Sorry.
Acronym every time. But it's powerful. I mean, within a few sessions, I could feel things healing. I mentioned in the testimony part that I had grown up, I had thought from the time I was a teenager that I was bipolar. Right up until I divorced my ex-husband, I always thought that I was bipolar, and it was just something that I that I managed fairly well. After I did EMDR, those symptoms were gone. And I believe now, I don't believe I ever was bipolar. I believe it was depression and anxiety. And anxiety was something that I never, I thought that that was people who worry all the time. You know, people who wring their hands before they make a phone call and just, you know, and can't. And sometimes that is, for some people, that is how it manifests, and that's okay. But for me, it manifested more of as like a drive to get things done. And so I thought that was being manic. And now I understand it was coming from this place of, I'm not good enough unless I get all of these things accomplished. And I'm going to stop and slow down and let myself feel anything. So I'm going to go, go, go. And then I would burn myself out and get depressed. And so I would have these cycles of anxiety and depression. And then also learning about complex PTSD, that PTSD flashbacks of like one horrible incident. It really hit home when in EMDR, my therapist asked me to, before we started doing EMDR, I needed to find a safe place to go back to. If things got difficult during the EMDR sessions, I'd be able to find this safe place in my mind. And I couldn't find one. I couldn't find a single memory or visualization or place of anything that was safe. And I was like, wow, you know, that's incredible. How can there not be any safe place? And I realized that my childhood was just filled with this constant fear of my alcoholic father, fear of the end of the world, you know, Y2K, Jesus is coming back, so you better be ready or you're going to get left behind. And so fear of tribulation, fear of not getting a chance to grow up because the world is going to end. And yet I'm supposed to be happy about it because Jesus is coming back, right?
Right. I hear that.
Yeah. And so this constant low level fear. And then in my marriage, the constant sand shifting beneath my feet, fear of what financial mess is he going to get us into next? Is he still looking at porn? What is he doing when he's away from home? You know, never being able to rest. And so I was able to do EMDR without finding that place. The skill that I did have was the ability to simply turn off my emotions. And so if things got tough in EMDR, I could do that. But then as I did EMDR, I healed. And I found so much healing in that. These symptoms that I thought were bipolar went away. Not that I've never been depressed or anxious again, but just this cycles and this extremes. And I could just feel my mind healing. Things like bad dreams, as I had less and less of those, and ruminating over things happened less and less. And I started to really get in touch with my body again. And, you know, so much of what I do, I work online. And so a lot of my day is spent kind of in my head, not in my body, being very separated from my body because of trauma. As I started to heal and I started to get back in touch with how do I feel, not just in my emotions, but where is that stored in my body? I read this book called The Body Keeps the Score.
Yes.
Which talks about how our trauma and our emotions are stored in our body. And I also went to Adult Children of Alcoholics. And so all of these things were really helpful for healing. But one thing that was fairly recent that was really powerful was just the acceptance that I was a victim of abuse. I could have never used those words, like less than a year ago, I could not have said to you, I was a victim of abuse, because I had in my mind this idea that victims are weak, and victims are, that there's something to be ashamed of. And even though I would have never said that to another woman, I would have always said that it was not her fault, that there was nothing to be ashamed of. And yet I couldn't internalize that for myself. And so that was a really powerful part of healing. Also to be able to acknowledge that the abuse from my ex-husband, it was abuse, you know, because people will talk about, okay, it doesn't have to be physical to be abuse. It can be emotional.
Right.
But then think of someone like my father who's, you know, yelling and screaming and things like that. And well, my ex-husband didn't do that. And then people will talk about sexual abuse. And then you go, okay, so that's like marital rape. Well, no, he didn't do that either. People talk about financial abuse and they'll say, you know, well, someone who's controlling the money, not allowing access to the money. Well, no, I'm the one that did the budget, you know. And so my therapist, though, helped me understand that the abuse was the lying, the manipulation. I had this constant hope that things are going to get better and that he's going to do the work that he needs to do. And he kept me strung along on that hope for so many years because he would act repentant and he would say, you know, I'm so sorry, I'm broken, I know I need to change. And yet he would not grab a hold of things and make changes right until the point where he molested our children. And so he was not changing all those years. And so the abuse there was that I was constantly on shifting sand, and I was constantly in this feeling of getting drug out on these little crumbs of hope that things would get better, just to have another lie and another deception, and then finding out again that he was using porn. And so understanding that emotional abuse is that, it's anything that's not leading towards greater intimacy, that's not building the relationship. And of course, you know, nothing's going to be perfect. And one of the things that I have learned in my current marriage to Daniel is the difference between we all have human flaws, and we're all going to make mistakes, and we're all going to do something that is abusive in that moment. You know, we say unkind things, we hurt the other person. But there's a difference between that and a pattern of abuse and unrepentance. And so understanding what that level of intimacy that is possible in a relationship, in a marriage, understanding that with Daniel has been one of the most powerful healing things in my life so far, is really delving in deep. And if we have disagreements, we keep working through it and working through it, and really wanting to understand and hear and validate each other. And we keep going until both of us are feeling back in that place of echad, what we call echad, or oneness, which comes from Genesis. Abba says that the husband and wife will become one. And coming back to that over and over and over helped me understand that's possible. That's what marriage is supposed to be. And that things that drive a wedge between that, whether it's saying that only the man makes the decision and that the woman's feelings in that are pushed aside, even if she's accepted. Well, you know, I guess I'll submit, and my feelings will be shoved aside. No, that's a breaking of that echad. That's a breaking of that intimacy. And emotional abuse can be so much more than just, you know, yelling and screaming and obvious things. If you can't trust the other person to be who they say they are, and if you can't trust them with your heart, then how are you going to trust them with your body? And so then we get into sexual abuse, is that it's not just marital rape. Porn use is sexual abuse.
Yes.
It's lying to the other person about who you are and what you're thinking about, and, you know, giving your heart and your body over to something else other than your spouse. And even Yeshua says that looking at a woman lustfully, that is adultery. And so understanding those nuances, you know, I think people are afraid to understand those nuances, because then they might have to take a real look at their own behavior and their own marriage and say, is this abusive? And there's something powerful, though, in that honesty and saying, being able to say, yes, it is. And that doesn't have to mean it's the end. If someone is willing to be repentant, and repentant looks like actually making amends, actually changing the behavior and allowing the person who's been hurt to grieve, and not telling them, well, you just need to forgive and forget, but really letting them grieve the hurt that's happened. I do think that there is healing possible for that in marriages, but it's got to come with honesty of let's be honest about what's really happening here. And so all of those realizations were very healing for me. And then the most recent thing has been meditation and nervous system healing. And of course, meditation is another thing that people get concerned can go into, you know, kind of a new agey or Buddhist or negative direction. But I've been able to find meditations that are very, very much focused just on being in the present moment, focusing on the breath and what's happening inside our bodies. And that's been very helpful for nervous system healing. And I know we're running out of time here, and the nervous system healing part is new to me. But I think the one thing I've gotten out of it so far, the most powerful thing, is understanding that our bodies don't know the difference between the past and the present and something we're visualizing. If you think about a memory, a negative memory from your past, just notice, you'll notice how it feels in your body. Your body tenses up, your heart rate increases, your breath gets more shallow. and your body thinks it's happening to me right now. And so being able to breathe and focus on the one thing that we always have available to us that's always here right in this present moment is our breath. And so being able to come back to that present moment and just notice what we need, and maybe we need to move. And that's been the other part of the nervous system healing is understanding this emotional cycle of when we feel afraid and we have all that physiological response of our tension and our heart rate and our breath. If we don't have an opportunity to tell our bodies that we're safe now, then we just store that fear in our body. Even if our mind says, oh yeah, the danger's over, we're fine, our body needs a chance to work through that. And so exercise, orgasm, some kind of movement, hugs, just holding someone. I think the science says for at least 20 seconds, lets your body feel like it's safe. So those are the things that have been healing tools for me. And I hope that they can be helpful to somebody else.
Emily, that was really awesome. And I just want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story and your story of hope and healing and restoration. Wow, you have just brought to the light so much. And for me personally, I love adult children of alcoholics meetings because in ACOA, it talks about healing the inner child. It talks about grieving the past. It talks about all these things. Well, most of the things that you have brought to the table, it talks about getting honest about what happened back then and how it's manifesting in the here and the now. And it talks about healthy self-care, healthy relationships, becoming trauma-informed. And that ultimately is what I believe the Father is doing. There's such a movement within the Torah community. He's rising up people that are understanding woman's role, design, and function, to understand mutual submission in marriages, that we are co-warriors. He is raising up healed warriors to come alongside of other people that are ready to get honest and open-minded and willing to do the hard work that it takes to heal, whether it's childhood, sexual abuse, or growing up in domestic abuse, growing up in alcoholic families. And it doesn't have to be just alcohol. It's drug addiction. It's mental illness, that it encompasses so many different childhood experiences that were less than nurturing that has caused us to walk crippled. And I love to ask people, who were you knit together in your mama's womb to be? Because you're not your trauma, you're not your addiction. And the question is not, what the heck is the matter with so-and-so? The question is, what happened?
Yeah.
What happened? And so the addictions are just a manifestation. The addictions are only a coping skill. The anxiety and depression can only be, like, I was diagnosed over and over and over with major depression. And that was only part of complex post-traumatic stress. Yeah, and our bodies do keep score.
Yes.
And there is some really great stuff to glean from psychology. You know, we're a mess in the Torah community, and we need people like you to talk about the reality of what you've gone through, what your girls went through, and how the Father's come alongside of you and given you tools to heal. Yeah. So I thank you. We are out of time, and I just want to say shalom to everybody, and may the Father bless you and keep you. May He lead and guide you. May He wrap His arms around you and give you peace in your soul. In the name of Yeshua, shalom.
Yevareh kecha Adonai. could.